A warm and friendly hello! Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Oops with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. We're going to chat it up in segment number two with one of our good friends, Rob Donaldson. He does such a great job with the show/podcast, Rob's Best Bets. We're going to talk with him about what he's all seen here in the first month plus of the season. The fact that we now finally have a little bit more of a reliable sample size to be able to gauge these teams. We'll talk about some of the games that we've got for Tuesday and so much more in the final segment. Going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Tuesday as we hit some bank shots. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one or two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter/X timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, Larzium. Naming does not matter, so as per usual, please send these into the timeline. And the other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. While I did not get in any Twitter/X questions today, everything is powered by Better. That is BETR. Better is making it all the better to be able to dive in on some daily fantasy, as by being a listener to this podcast, you're able to get things all set up very easily and for free when you go to BETR.app, put in that promo code of VSIMPOD, VSIMPOD. That gets you $10 free. All you need to do is take a look at a player's stat line, determine whether or not they're going to go over or under it, where jurisdictions apply. You can dive in on some money lines and spreads as well, and boom, you're all good to go. And we're all good to go to take a look back at what was a very, very small college basketball slate on Monday, trying to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
Kansas State all over Mississippi Valley State, who's been a little bit more respectable this year. 108-49 the final, so Mississippi Valley State loses by 59 points. As Mississippi Valley State, Michael James had 23 points, and he did his best, but for Mississippi Valley State, they had 19 turnovers and 16 made field goals. For Kansas State, 19 out of 36 from three, including P.J. Haggerty, going 5-6 from the outside for 28 points. Abdi Bashir was able to supply 15 points. He made 5 threes. David Castillo off the bench, 19 points. Just clean and utter domination right there. Southern Miss, they do find a way against Grambling by a kind of 68-60, as Grambling led at the half, but Southern Miss, if I'm not mistaken, they got the final 8 points of this game. They ace it away by going 11-14 at the free throw line. Grambling actually does ruin the rebound battle, 38-32, but for Grambling, despite going 7 of 13 from 3, it was the turnovers that killed them. 21 turnovers to 19 made field goals. Now Southern Miss had 17 of their own, but Southern Miss, they persevere with Tyleek Weeks being able to supply 19 points, 7 rebounds, and also being able to get the job done as a favorite. Texas, they win and they cover against Southern 95-69. The final as Southern does go 5-12 from 3, but they lose the turnover battle 14-13. They lose the rebound battle 37-27. And on the side of Texas was Mateus Vukatidis. Hopefully you said that correct. He went 14-14 at the free throw line, 20 big points. Jordan Pope has been a little bit hot and cold this year. He's able to spy 18 points. And Simeon Wolter off the bench, he goes for 14 points. He went 8-8 at the free throw line as well. For Penn, no cover, but they do get the win against Lafayette. One of the real lone underdogs that were able to cover was Lafayette, 74-72. The finals, Lafayette does go 8-21 from 3. And for Penn, 12-19 at the free throw line. Might have been a little bit costly on the spread, but they did have Augustus Garrett supply 15 points in this game. He had 14 points in like the first 14 minutes, and then he cooled down from there. But Dalton Scantleberry off the bench, 14 points, 6-9. Very nice from the floor. And for Penn, they did win their turnover battle by a count of 13-9. And then one of the other underdogs to be able to get the job done, that was New Orleans. A lot of places closed them as like a 1 or 2 point very slim underdog, and they get the outright win this by a count of 84-83, as Incarnate Word goes 12-27 from 3, and after scoring just 26 points in the first half, Incarnate Word a 57 point second half, but New Orleans, they go 7-14 from 3. New Orleans does lose the turnover battle 18-11, but they win the rebound battle 31-27, and for New Orleans, they made the free throws 21-26 at the charity stripe as TJ Cope, he had the Incarnate Word Cardinals coping with the fact that he scored 19 points, MJ Thomas 16 points, 8 rebounds, and Ja'Kavion Buckley 7 assists to 5 turnovers, and he had 18 points. So New Orleans finds a way to be able to get the job done, and also being able to get the job done, Charleston Southern, this team is starting to grow on me a little bit, 84-44 over South Carolina State, who's been quite pathetic this year. But for South Carolina State, 15 turnovers and 16 made field goals, and Charleston Southern 12 of 32 from three-point range. As off the bench, Bryson Blaine, he had 18 points. Alan Sumler, he was able to provide 14 as well. So nice, clean domination by them. And if you're looking at the last 7 days in college basketball, the favorites have been doing a very solid job against the spread. 153, 130, and 6 against the spread. And on Monday, they went 4-2 against the spread. Meanwhile, the overrate in college basketball over the last 7 days is about 51%, 146 overs, 140 unders, and a few pushes along the way. And if you're looking at the entirety of the season, favorites on the spread ending at about 51.6%, 786, 736, and 23, with the unders still ending at darn near 51%, 777 unders, 750 overs, and a few pushes along the way. So that's where we're seeing college basketball right now, and that's where we're all getting trend-wise. Coming next, how about if we do chat it up with our good friend Rob Donaldson about Tuesday's games, what we can make out of this data set, and so much more right here on Coast to Coast Eats with myself, Greg Hughes Peterson, now a part of the Beats and Family Podcast. Side edges college basketball season? Well, VSiN experts use CBB Analytics, the most comprehensive college basketball analytics platform in the world. See injury impact on and off data, clutch time performance metrics, first versus second half splits, and so much more. Utilize the promo code of VSiN, that is VSIN, to get $30 off and find your betting edge over at CBBAnalytics.com. That is CBBAnalytics, all one word, .com. For anyone that is new to VSiN, well, I wish you a friendly hello. This is an attention to anyone that is new to VSiN because you're able to get some free stuff with our daily newsletter. It's a great way to catch up on everything that's happening in the sports betting world. It's delivered straight to your inbox every single morning. VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, strategies for the day's betting menu, and so much more. Sign up for free today over at VSiN.com/newsletter. That's VSIN.com/newsletter, and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That is VSIN.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN. And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Guest Kiss Eats with myself, Greg Eats Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by this man as we've got Rob Donaldson aboard. He does such a great job with the show/podcast, Rob's Best Bets. He does a tremendous job over at Underdog Fantasy as well. He is dialed in on a little bit of everything college basketball, does great job on the football front, and so much more. And you're able to follow him on the old Twitter/X at RobDFB. And Rob, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me on, Greg. And, you know, every single week we begin to kind of take in more information on every single team as they go on the road for their first true road games, as they finish these MTEs. And now we're kind of at a point right now where we are going to see growth from these teams, certainly, but we have a stronger foundation than we did even 2 weeks ago. And that's a real fun, exciting time in the sport, in my opinion.
Yep, it certainly is. And just what are some of the things that you take a look at this time of year? Because I do feel like there are going to be teams that are going to have positive/negative regression with things like 3-point shooting, what have you. But now I think we're starting to get to the point where we have a sample size of, all right, this team just can't shoot to save their lives. This team can really shoot to save their lives. And it's trying to determine, all right, even though they might be for real, is this maybe a little bit too much?
Yeah, I think right now one of the things to key in on is the teams that tend to flourish in the early goings, especially on the MTE side, is the teams that have athletic guards who can make jumpers. And as the season goes on, that's still an important aspect of all these college basketball teams. Obviously, the premium is on guards in this sport. I don't know if that will ever change, just given the ultimate dynamic that they have at play of being able to score from everywhere, being able to facilitate. But what we will see is a lot of teams that maybe have kind of been up and down and been fluctuating defensively will start to iron some things out. And as guys get healthier and reintegrated into lineups, you know, I think of like Peterson over at Kansas, for example, and a number of other guys, I think we're really going to start to see these teams take their full-on identity if they're kind of balanced, but just kind of missing that one component. So yeah, that's what I'm cluing in on right now. And there's a lot of teams that I think fit that bill that I'm excited to see over the next couple of weeks.
Oh, absolutely. If you're missing a Peterson, you are missing so much. So I agree with you on that front. And I do think that it's going to be interesting to see how these teams are going to be able to mix and match, as well as Rob Donaldson, who does great work with the Show Slide podcast, Rob's Best Bets. He's joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops. And we are going to be seeing conference play within the next few days. But we've also got teams that went from playing conference games last week back to playing non-conference games. How do you take a look at that dynamic? Because I always do think that things matter a little bit more with regards to these conference games. And when you go from playing conference games to not playing conference games, like Michigan is going to be doing that against Villanova on Tuesday, I always think that that's an interesting and a little bit of a strange dynamic.
It's kind of almost like a very, very different way to evaluate, you know, if you go back 5 years ago, because the transfer portal leads to crazy roster changes. As we've seen, coaches jumping ship more frequently also kind of leads to a lot of new integrations of styles for a lot of these programs that have been mainstays in the high major category or even the mid-major category in their selective conferences for X and O. Because of that, there isn't a lot of familiarity when you're talking about year-over-year conference opponents becoming more and more used to each other. Obviously, you have, you know, Tom Izzo, who will always be Tom Izzo. You have Bill Self, who will always be Bill Self. But if you look at the totality of each individual league, there are so many different players every single year-over-year, that I think it actually ends up lending its hand to a little bit more of a wild card open conference in conference season, that is, rather than years past. And so I do think that there's different ways to evaluate conference opponents once you kind of get to that second time around. But on these front end ones, when it's, you know, a new team versus a new team as in conference foes, I think there's actually a really good opportunity to kind of buck a lot of the trends that kind of showcase maybe, you know, home teams in the first matchup doing extremely well, because we're kind of living in a different era right now in college basketball.
Yep, we certainly are. And it's been really interesting to take a look at the top of the sport as well, because I'm not sure if you agree, Rob, but it really does feel like we've got a big few teams in college basketball right now, as we do have Rob Donaldson of the Rob's Best Bets show joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops. No doubt about it, what Michigan has been able to do this year has been absolutely superb. And then you've got Arizona, who started off the year very, very hot, still doing a nice job, win that game against Auburn. They've set themselves up with a great resume. Duke was able to get a big win on the road against Michigan State. Iowa State got the job done as well. And those are really, in my opinion, your big four teams. And then you got the teams with one loss, like Gonzaga losing to Michigan, Purdue losing to Iowa State, UConn losing to Arizona, those teams that have one loss to one of those upper echelon teams, Michigan State as well. And I think that's an interesting dynamic, because I feel like we've got those four creme de la creme teams. You've got the four or five teams that lost to the creme de la creme teams, but absolutely nobody else. And then you've got a big giant middle after that with a team like a Louisville that I think might be lurking out there in the weeds as well. And Vanderbilt.
Yeah, and you know what, Greg, what you're kind of illustrating here, and this is a problem that college football, not to change sports on you, but college football has this problem in spades, because the best teams aren't playing the best teams in college football. And then when it
Notre
comes down
Dame.
to Notre Dame, the selection Sunday, it's just like, okay, well, we don't know who's the best because these teams haven't played each other in college hoops. These dudes are playing everybody right now. I mean, you go down Duke's schedule of who they've already played. They're sitting at 10-0. They've only played 10 games this season. Well, the last three have been on the road in the Breslin Center against Michigan State, at home against Florida, on a neutral against Arkansas. They played Kansas in Madison Square Garden. They've already played Texas as well on a neutral court as well. And I do feel like when you're looking at what kind of ringer some of these teams have already gone through 10, 9, 8 games into the season, it's such a different dynamic, because we are learning immediately about these teams. And although, again, you know, these teams are going to grow past this first month, maybe 2 months of the season, I do think it's a really good kind of selling point when you already have seen these teams go up against some of the best in the entire sport.
Yep, absolutely. And I do think that it's going to be really interesting to see how things play out moving forward. And in terms of the conference dynamic, because we're going to be seeing many, many more conference games in the next few weeks, I do feel like these games have been a good litmus test for these conferences, though, because with the SEC, it appears as though it's a little bit of a down year for them. You really don't have that surefire top 10 team. Alabama's probably your best team right now out there in the SEC. With the ACC, they're not quite back to where they have been in the past. yes, but certainly they look to be building some upward momentum. And then I look at the Big Ten and the Big 12, and I think that they've really set themselves up for success. Both conferences have maybe one or two slugs in there, but all in all, those two conferences have really impressed me to begin the season.
100%, and I don't think that can be understated, because, you know, when it does come down to Selection Sunday, kind of like what we were referencing right there, we want to be able to lean on hard facts. You know, what was the result of matchups versus matchups? And the fact that certain conferences have already arisen to show that, yeah, we are the top, we are the creme de la creme. I mean, Iowa State going into Mackey and handling business by 20 plus points or whatever it amounted to be. I think that is such a power move, such a great representation for the Big 12. And then obviously Arizona has done very similar by, you know, going into stores and beating UConn almost wire to wire is kind of what it felt like in that game. And when Houston is one of the teams that's not even being mentioned as one of the top three teams in the conference right now because of, you know, win-loss record, you're in a very, very good spot. And even Kansas, who we know has one of the best head coaches in the sport, I look at the Big 12, and not to, you know, go crazy and say, oh, this conference is head and shoulders above everybody else. I do think that when you're looking at the depth of the league, it feels a lot better than in years past. And I do feel like there are certain conferences that have risen above, say, like the Big East or the SEC. When you do look at the Big 12, the Big 10, and heck, I'll even shine a little bit of light on the ACC, because they've been playing a lot of tough games. They've been winning a lot of games. And although it's been down over past years, it kind of feels like the head coaching that they've kind of entered into the league with is starting to really rise to the surface this season.
It certainly does. As Rob Donaldson, who does such great work with the show/podcast, Rob's Best Bets, is joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops, and golden opportunity for the ACC on Tuesday with Clemson versus BYU. Right now, BYU is about a 5.5 to 6.5 point favorite over there at MSG and a total of 152.5. I'm not sure how you take a look at this game, but I do think that traveling through multiple time zones for BYU is going to take it out of them. And a lot of people think that Clemson is this super duper slow team, that they are all defense and no offense. But I feel like BYU and Clemson have been a little bit more similar than what a lot of people want to give credit for, because honestly, the BYU offense has left a little bit of something to be desired in my eyes. The defense has been pretty solid. And I do think that in this case, with the way that Clemson takes care of the ball, I think that they could hold in there.
Yeah. And honestly, when you look at Clemson, and again, I just love how some of these teams have approached their early season schedules, because Clemson, you look at them, they've already faced off on the road against Georgetown, on the neutral against West Virginia, a neutral against Georgia, and then a away game in Tuscaloosa against Alabama. And all those things are great in terms of the actual programs that they're going up against. But if you look at Georgia and Alabama in their own little vacuum, and then compare that to Ross Hodge, West Virginia, you are getting an array of stylistic ball games. And the final scores, you know, reflected that of 137 total points against West Virginia, 174 points against Alabama. And what we saw in that Alabama game, to your point, is although Clemson has this kind of, you know, notion behind them of being a slower paced team under Brad Brunell, that offense came to play in the second half, in particular through the first 15 minutes, basically overcame a 20 point deficit to knot it up at a tie game, and actually even took the lead in the second half. And I think from that standpoint, Clemson is far more battle tested in a number of different ways than BYU, and 6.5 points, more than two full possessions, I feel like Clemson is going to be right there to actually win the game. And catching that amount of points, I love taking a shot at the Tigers here.
Yep, I do as well. I'm going to be in on those points, as that is going to be a fun one. And then the other game out there at MSG, it's a neutral court game, but UConn is playing at MSG. It's pretty much home game for them against Florida. Right now, that line's about 4.5, and that total's 145.5. I would have to lean, if I had to pick the spread right now, on UConn, but I want to see how that matures a little bit more. But I look at that total of right around 145.5, 146.5. Recognize that UConn doesn't play fast, but with all the second and third chances that Florida gets, with the way that Florida plays very up-tempo, I do feel like, especially if this is close enough where it's on the spread, you get those late fouls if you're down 5 or 6 points with a minute remaining, I do feel like there might be a little bit of value here on that over.
I do actually really like the over in that ball game. And one of my definitive bets in that game in terms of spreads is going to be UConn laying the 4.5. And I do feel pretty confident in that number, because when you do look at how Florida has handled some of these travel spots, you know, notably, they just played at Cameron Indoor. It finished as a very close game. It was a very exciting game. But for much of the game, Florida was kind of getting, you know, beat around. They were down double-digit points for most of the outing. And then they had a nice little kind of late-game surge, which I don't want to discredit them for, but it kind of very similarly happened as well against Arizona to start the year as well, where, yeah, it finished as a 6-point game, but it kind of felt like Arizona had a handle on that out there as basically a home site game for Arizona to start the year. But once again, we're looking at UConn on a quote unquote neutral floor where the crowd is going to be 90-10 in favor of UConn. And I do feel like every single time UConn plays in this arena, they've already got a leg up. It's a shorter spread because, you know, obviously Florida is carrying a lot of weight as a brand right now, but I think this is kind of one of those games where UConn could just go ahead and open up the scoring, in my opinion.
Yep, I think so as well. I do think that UConn puts themselves in good footing here. I wouldn't want to go much past like a 4.5, but right now seeing that 4.5, I do like that as well. As Rob Donaldson, who does great work with the show /podcast, Rob's Best Bets, is joining me on Kiss Hoops. And certainly we've got some Big Ten blood in our veins, and this is going to be a fun one with Illinois, a 3.5-point favorite over Ohio State. That total's in the mid-150s. What do you make out of this game? Because Illinois has slowed down their tempo a little bit more, and now they're getting Tomislava Vesic back, but we do know that Ohio State has some of the most veteran guards in all of college basketball as well, and I think that this is going to be a nice mix of an Illinois team that has the advantage down low versus an Ohio State team that might have a little bit of an edge with regards to their guard play.
And honestly, you know, again, I love that college basketball is in this position, but, you know, Illinois has already tested themselves against a number of great teams this season on neutral sites, on kind of pseudo home games, if you're talking about playing Tennessee and Nashville, and that, you know, Texas Tech, you look at Alabama, you look at UConn, you look at Tennessee, they've only played 9 total games, and it feels like half of them have been against worthy opponents that can potentially beat any team in the country, and they've done extremely well. And what we kind of noticed, I think, about this Illinois team this season in particular is they are a lot more together. They are definitely, you know, good vibes are flowing. If you watch some of the behind the scenes in the locker room after big wins, it just kind of feels like this team is together. Whereas if you think back to some of Brad Underwood's teams at Illinois over the last 5 years, it always kind of felt like there was drama brewing. Somebody wasn't getting the ball enough. They were hitting a losing skid. Everything was falling apart. They were kicking players off the team. It doesn't feel like this Illinois team is going to have those problems. And when you factor that into being already battle-tested, going into Ohio State, you know, in Columbus, it's always going to be a fun kind of atmosphere when you're going on the road in the Big Ten. But I do think that Illinois is the task here. And yeah, laying 3 points or 3.5 points, again, scary when you're going on the road in the Big Ten. But I think Illinois is actually the side that I want to be backing in this matchup here.
Yep, and with Illinois, this is a team that does such a great job on the glass as well. So we've got a lot of intrigue out there. And are there any other games that you're going to be taking a look at for this Tuesday? As we don't necessarily have the biggest card, but we've got some very, very high quality games. And then you got things like Ryder versus Bucknell, which is always a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of kind of those mid-major ugly record games, as I like to call them, because there are some teams in the mid-major ranks, as we know, who challenge way above their weight. I think of Oakland, for example, is the big one this year. But there are teams that just go through the ringer in the early goings, and then we see it kind of pay dividends down the stretch of the season. Well, one of the teams that I think really has emerged well in the beginning of the season, this was a team that I really loved coming into the season as well, but Wyoming, Sundance Wicks. When you look at how in year two, he's already built up this team. I mean, they went into Lubbock. They only lost by 4. They had a really good chance to actually win that game outright. And across the board, when you look at how they played against Norfolk, Denver, Dartmouth, these are games that they controlled against very quality mid-major opponents. And I think from that standpoint, I think that Wyoming laying a big number like 12.5 is, although a little bit aggressive, it's on the higher side. I think it's an indicative line of how this game is going to play out against South Dakota, and I will look to lay that for as long as I can here.
Yep, and I think that that is a great way to look, and we've got ourselves a great day of college basketball on Tuesday, and next few weeks, next few months, it is all going to be absolutely magnificent. And Rob, you're one of the best in the business in terms of taking a look at this fine game. Let the good people at home know what's on tap for you and how people are able to follow along on social media and other platforms.
Well, hey, Greg, always love talking hoops with you, my man. And for those who want to follow my college basketball bets throughout the week and into the weekend and throughout the entire season, you can do so on my YouTube channel at Rob Donaldson and also on my Twitter/X feed at RobDFB. But as always, Greg, I appreciate having me on, my man.
Always great to have Rob aboard. Every single time he joins me, he lends such amazing insights, and he did so once again today. So big thanks to Rob for joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast, and coming up next, it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Tuesday as we hit some bank shots. Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by Rob Donaldson. He does such a tremendous job over at Underdog Fantasy, along with the show/podcast Rob's Best Bets. Every single time he joins me, he lends such great insights, and he did so once again today. So a big thanks to Rob for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Tuesday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter/X feed at GUnit_81, and we are going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is where we go with the games with two bigger conference teams up top, and then any games involving these conferences are going to be at the bottom. This will be the America East, the Patriot League, the MEAC, the SWAC, the Southland. I think that we've got them all for today. If I didn't say Patriot League as well. 601-602 is how we started off. Clemson is facing off against BYU at Madison Square Garden. So, neutral court game. And right now with Clemson, they are a 5.5-point underdog. Total on this game, it is 150.5. And I did set a total of a 150.5. So, we're going to wait for a little bit of line movement. If we can get down to a 150 or less, I'll be in on the over. A 151 or higher, that triggers an under. But that said, I'm going to be in on Clemson with the points. With Clemson, I set them as a 2.5-point underdog. This is just a really balanced team. Clemson is actually more efficient right now on offense and defense. They're 19th in the country in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, 47th in terms of points allowed, but they're just doing a really good job of taking care of the ball. Top 15 team in terms of fewest turnovers on a per possession basis. They're really maximizing possessions, and even though they're in a little bit of transition in the backcourt, they really have not found that main facilitator, though Zach Foster seems to be stepping up. He's been coming in off the bench, giving the team 3 assists and about 8 points per game. You just have right now a good blend of guys that are all firing all cylinders. You've got 9 different guys give you at least 6.2 points per game. Nobody above 12.1. RJ Godfrey, your top rebounder with 12.6 boards per contest. He's been able to lead the way. And for Clemson, top 100 team in terms of rebound percentage, Nick Davidson, who comes over from Nevada, giving you 5+ rebounds per game. He's been able to help out with that. And this BYU team has been pretty strong on defense as well. They're a top 50 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, and not playing overly fast. BYU has been a relatively mid-tempo team this far this season. AJ DeBanza has been the main attraction thus far, 19.5 points, 6.5 assists, shoots 35% from 3. Last year's top scorer, Richie Saunders, still shooting it well from 3, 42% 3-point shooter, 6 boards, 2.5 steals per game, so he's been able to do a nice job on that front. It's a BYU team that has been able to do a pretty solid job as well in terms of being able to win the rebound battle, top 100 team with regards to rebound percentage, with Kabikita leading the way with 7 boards, 7.5 points per game, and also 2 blocks per contest. And BYU, also a very efficient team, as they're a top 30 team in terms of fewest turnovers on a per possession basis. I don't think that they have quite the explosiveness on offense that we all expected, but they have had Kennard Davis shoot 48% from 3. Robert Wright comes over from Baylor. He's done a bit of everything, 17 points, shooting over 40% 14% from three, 6.5 assists per game. So I did think that you get a pretty clean game. It is always a little bit tough with the shooting backdrop out there at MSG, but I think that both of these teams are efficient enough to be able to find a way to be able to get points up on the board. So 150 or less than on the over, 151 or higher the under end for BYU could only set them as a 2.5-point favorite. So wanted to take those points with Clemson. 603, 604 on the card. It is Michigan, and they are going to be playing us Villanova. Villanova, an underdog of 15.5 points with a total of 149.5, and I'm going to be willing to take a stab here on Michigan. I set them as a 16.5-point favorite, so wouldn't want to go past 16, but it's a Michigan team that is right now just completely dominant. They're a top 20 team in both points scored and points allowed on a per-possession basis. They're still having a little bit of a tough time taking care of the ball. 13.5 turnovers per game, that's a bit of an issue, but this has really been a top 10 team with regards to rebound percentage, with having EXL Lindeborg give you 15.5 points, 7.5 boards, a steal, a block per contest while shooting 39% from three. 7'3" Ade Mara has been tremendous with 3 blocks, 9.5 points, 9 boards per contest. Morris Johnson, who was a little bit of an afterthought coming into the year, 6.5 boards, 14.5 points per game. And I feel like Elliott Cadu has helped this offense be all the more efficient. He's not necessarily a guy that's going to wow you with this 3-point shooting or anything like that, 8.5 points. And he has been shooting about 36.5% from 3, but 5 assists, actually closer to 6 assists, to only 2 turnovers per game. And that helps out someone like a Roddy Gale, who's been able to give you 11.5 points per game. And for Villanova, the one thing that they do have going for them is that they've got one of the best rebounders in all of college basketball. That'd be Duke Brennan. 11.5 points, 12.9 rebounds per game. He's generating a steal per contest as well. Obviously not a guy that's going to shoot it from three, but Bryce Lindsey, main scorer with 18 points per game. He's shooting 49% from three. I think we're going to see a little bit of regression there. And with Kevin Willard's teams, other than last year with the Crab 5, they've never really been up-tempo. And we're seeing that this year with his Villanova squad. Villanova's right now 343rd. In all of college basketball in terms of total possessions per game. Now, Michigan is very much looking to gun it. Michigan is 14th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, but Michigan has already taken on a low-tempo team in Rutgers and just completely blew them out and still got 100-plus points up on the board. Now, I think Villanova is a little bit better than that, and you've got a Caden Lewis for this Villanova team doing a nice job doling it out. 6 assists, so 1.8 turnovers per game. Villanova, a top-runner team in terms of taking care of the ball. I do think that that gives them a little bit of an opportunity here, especially them being good in terms of being up guard on the inside. They've been a top 75 team towards opponent's 2-point shooting percentage, and Villanova should see positivity to the fact that teams are shooting 42.5% for 3 against them. I recognize that it's not a great perimeter defense. I think they're better than allowing teams to shoot 42.5% from 3, but I just think that this Michigan team is so much more dominant, and they do find a way to be able to win this game and win this game pretty convincingly. So I did set a line here of a 16.5. I'm going to be willing to lay up to 16, and right now I'm seeing this total come to a 148.5 in some spots. At a 150 or less, I'm in on the over. 605, 606 on the betting board. It is Little Rock on the road against West Virginia. West Virginia, a 24.5 point favorite. Until this game, it is 131.5, and I'm going to be willing to take the points with Little Rock. I did set them as an underdog of 21 points. Now, for Little Rock, this has been a pretty rough season, to say the least. After last year, they were a good defense that just got nothing going on offense. Now, Little Rock's defense is 336th in all of college basketball in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, despite the fact that you do bring back some of your main guys from the season ago. They did lose K.K. Robinson for the season prior to the season starting, but he was out all of last year as well. You bring back Jonathan Lawson, 14.5 points, 3.5 boards, 3.5 assists per game. It's a team that just does not get to the free throw line at all. Bottom 20 team in terms of free throw attempts per game. They're outside the top 300 in terms of their 2-point shooting percentage. They are shooting 39% from three. As Braxton Bayless, who comes over from Western Kentucky, 9 points per game, he's shooting over 50% from three. And Kachi Nazi has been able to shoot 42% from the outside, 10 points per contest, but 16.5 turnovers per game. Well, being a low tempo team as well, it's not like this Little Rock team is like rocketing up and down the floor. Right now, for Little Rock, they're about 319th of the country in terms of total possessions per game. That's not great, but they also face a West Virginia team has about 344th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. I would say that West Virginia is a good but not great defense, as they've got Russ Hodge, who comes over from North Texas, and they always played a very slow and controlled style over there. And for West Virginia right now, 8th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, and you've been able to have Brenton Lorient do a nice job getting the team 7 boards, a little bit over a steal and a block per game. He's been able to be a bit of a do-it-all guy. Honoroff has been that main scorer, 16.5 points, comes over from Chattanooga, shooting 38.5% 39% from three, but it is a squad that's been hit or miss from three, shooting 32% from the outside. Trayson Eagleseff, who was a really good scorer over in North Dakota last year, only 7 points, 4.5 boards. He expected a little bit more there, but Harlan Obiana down low, a true 7-footer, has done a nice job on the glass as he's been able to slide the seam with 5 boards, not really giving you a lot of scoring, but I do think that with West Virginia, they're not going to be able to generate white enough offense to be able to cover this big of a number, and it has been a West Virginia team has allowed teams to shoot a little bit over 36% from three. Now, if West Virginia, also top on our team, in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis, do think that this has gone up a little bit too far, even with the versatility of Jasper Floyd, 8.4 assists per game for West Virginia, and so set a line of 21. I'm going to be one take the points below the rock. Made a total of a 131, so here at the 131.5, I'm also in on the under. 607, 608 on the betting board. You've got Columbia, and they're going to be on the road facing off against Stony Brook, and Stony Brook does find themselves as a home underdog here, as you're going to be catching 4.5 points with them total on this game. It is 147.5, and I did set a total here of a 147.5, so if we can get a little bit of movement to a 147 or less, I'll be in on the over, 148 or higher the under, but South Columbia is a 3.5 point favorite, so here at 4+, I'm going to be willing to take the points with Stony Brook. Stony Brook, a much better team than they were a season ago. Last year, this team was outside the top three or in third near everything, and I recognize that this team still has something to be desired with their perimeter defense. Our line teams shoot 34.5% from three, but they've cleaned up the turnovers, only about 10.5 turnovers per game, as they bring in Rob Brown from Nichols and Eric Pratt from UW-Milwaukee, who have really been able to elevate this offense. With Pratt, 19 points, 4 boards, 3 assists. He's only shooting about 29% from three. Brown shoots closer to 36% from three, plays a little bit more off the ball, but you do have a bunch that I think might have a little bit of a tough time down low. This is a Columbia team that is right on the top 20 in terms of rebound percentage, and right now Richard Goods, he's been able to give you the goods for this bunch as he's been able to spy for Stony Brook about 6 boards, 8 points per game. He's the lone guy on the roster right now that gives you over 5 rebounds per game, and for Columbia, their main kryptonite has been turning the ball over. This has been a Stony Brook team that hasn't been bad at generating turnovers. They're a top 175 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, but for this Columbia bunch, they are just absolutely mauling down low. Right now, you've got Blair Thompson and Sanu Endi Bedri. They've been able to combine for about 14 rebounds per game, 23 points per game between the two of them. Both are shooting over 44% from three. As for Columbia, each of your top 4 scorers are shooting above 41% from three. As well, they shoot 39.5% from the outside. Should see some regression, but again, you're going up against the Stony Brook team that hasn't guarded the three well. Columbia has been a top 75 team in terms of their opponent's 3-point shooting percentage as well, so they have done a nice job guarding the arc. Now, Columbia is going to allow you to have clean possessions outside the top 320 in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, but Kenny Noland has been really good in the backcourt, 17 points, 3 assists, he's shooting 41% from 3-point range. Gerard O'Keefe has been able to give you 10 points, he's shooting 46% from 3-point range, and with all the size of this Columbia team, you've been able to get 5 rebounds per game out of Mason Ritter. Ryan Solis has been able to give you 5 boards per contest. You've got essentially 5 different guys give you at least 4.3 rebounds per game. I think that they're going to be able to maul Stony Brook down low, but I do think that Stony Brook does just enough to hold in this game because we have seen Columbia have their turnover woes. And again, with this Columbia team, I do think that that 3-point shooting has a little bit of regression. It's a Columbia team that is honestly not playing overly up-tempo as well. You've got a Stony Brook team that, once again, much like last year, they've been playing a little bit more slowly, currently 333rd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Columbia has slowed themselves down and now being about 277th in the country, so a 147 or less in on the over, 148 or higher the under, and with Columbia, set them as a 3.5 point favorite, so at 4+, we'll take those points with Stony Brook. 609, 610 on the card, it is Ball State. They play us at South Dakota State. South Dakota State, road favorite of 6.5 points, 139.5 is the total, and I did set this line at a 3.5, so I'm going to be willing to take the points with Ball State. This is a Ball State squad that has been very good at generating turnovers, a top 30 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, but they haven't really been able to cash in on offense. They're outside the top 275 in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, as right now averaging about 65 points per game. They're shooting 30.5% from the outside, and when it comes to Armani Ziegler, he's been very good in the backcourt. He's come in from St. Peter's, 11.5 points, 2.5 assists, a little bit of a steal per game, shooting about 33% from 3-point range, but problem for this Ball State team has been just getting manhandled on the glass outside the top 225 in terms of rebound percentage, and just that interior play, as they're outside the top 320 with their own 2-point shooting percentage. They're hovering around 300th in terms of opponent's 2-point shooting percentage, so while they do a great job in terms of generating those turnovers, that has been a bit of a problem. And now you've got a South Dakota State team that has been playing with each other for a very, very long time. Even though you have a coaching change of Brian Peterson in the offseason, they do retain the likes of Joe Saylor along Kellen Gary, and Jane Jackson has been a really nice add. Jackson, 12.5 points, 4.5 boards, 2.5 assists per game after he was a little bit more of a understudy a season ago. He's been able to take on the mantle. It's a South Dakota State team that's only shooting about 31.5% from three, so they haven't necessarily lit it up there, but they do a nice job in terms of controlling the boards. Right now for South Dakota State, they have been a top 35 team in terms of defensive rebound percentage. Opponents are only grabbing about 7.5 offensive rebounds per game. And for South Dakota State, with their three-point shooting lacking a little bit, it's big that they're a top 175 team in terms of their two-point shooting percentage. Now, South Dakota State, outside the top 225 in terms of ball security, 12.5 turnovers per game, but I like the game of Matthew Moores, 7.5 points, 4 boards. He hasn't really popped it well from 3, but gives you a little bit of versatility there. And then you've got a do-it-all player in Joe Saylor, who's been able to give you a pair of assists, 12 points, shooting 37.5% from 3-point. In the end, though, I do think that Ball State is going to be able to hold up here. With Ball State, I do think that they do an okay job against the South Dakota State team, that while they do a great job with their defensive rebounding, they're also outside the top 200 in terms of opponents' two-point shooting percentage, and I do think that Ball State is going to be able to generate some turnovers and think that you get some late-game fouling for the over. Set a total of a 141.5. I do like the over, and with South Dakota State, only set them as a 3.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take those points. With Ball State, 6-11, 6-12 on the card, it is Brown, and what can Brown do for you? Well, they're on the road against Providence, and if they lose by fewer than 16 points, you'll make money. They're a 16.5-point underdog. Throughout this game, it's 147.5, and I'm going to be willing to take those points with Brown. I did set my line at a 13.5. Now, the Brown offense has not been great, to say the least. Right now, Brown is outside the top 275 in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, and you've got a tempo war here. Brown is 311th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Providence is 21st in the country, and for Brown, 68th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, but 298th in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, with turnovers being the real issue there. Currently 296th in all of college basketball in terms of turnovers on a per-possession basis, but this is not necessarily a Providence team that's going to generate a ton of turnovers outside the top 330 in terms of turnovers for us on a per-possession basis, and this Providence defense is currently getting blowtorched. They are outside the top 175 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, as they're allowing teams to shoot darn near 35% from three-point range, and for Providence, they're outside the top 275 in terms of defensive rebound percentage, despite the fact that Oswin can't pronounce Elias' name. Give you 3.5 blocks, 7.5 points, 7 rebounds per game. They just haven't been able to give you much rough and tumble down low. They do have two nice guards in Jason Edwards and Jalen Sellers. These two guys have done a nice job being able to supply a combined about 34 points per game, and with Jalen Sellers, he's shooting 40% from three. Overall, this team is shooting 36.5% from the outside, but that said, when it comes to this Providence team, they are likely going to have a bit of a tough time handling Landon Lewis down low. He was missing for the first few games of the season for Brown, and that's part of the reason why their offensive efficiency numbers are so low. He missed the first five games. He's been able to, since returning, give the team 12 points, 5.5 boards. He's not a guy that's going to light you up from three, as Jeremiah Jenkins is really that main outside shooter, shooting about 47.5% from three, 9 points, 2 steals per game for a Brown team that lost their main guard from a season ago, Keno Lilly Jr. So it's been up to guys like Adrino Achidino, who's been able to give you about 10 points per game, but I do think that Brown is going to be able to hold in there. I love the way that their defense has been playing all season long, and it's a Brown unit that has allowing teams to shoot less than 32% from three-point range. They've been a top 150 team in terms of opponents' two-point shooting percentage, and a top 100 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis, even though they themselves have had a tough time taking care of the ball. So, do expect a little bit of a lower-scoring game. Made my total 145.5. I like the under, and I'm going to take 14-plus here with Brown. 6-13, 6-14. On the card, it is Illinois, and they are going to be on the road against Ohio State, and the Ohio State University does find themselves as a home underdog here of 3.5 points. 155.5 is the total, and set a total of 156.5. I do like the over with Illinois. They're actually playing much more slowly than they did a season ago. Last year, they were one of the most up-tempo teams in all of college basketball, and frankly, the last 2 years, they've been one of the more up-tempo teams in all of college basketball, but they've dialed it back to being a bit more of a mid-tempo team this year, while Ohio State were around about 160th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, so you've got relative equals here. Illinois, as a matter of fact, 164th, but I do like the over because this Illinois team now has Tomislav Avisa firing out cylinders after he was dealing with a little bit of an injury, and he should be able to allow Illinois to be able to win the battle down low. Now, only set Illinois as a 2.5-point favorite because even though the backcourt appears to be much improved with their shooting from a season ago last year, this Illinois team, well outside the top 275 in terms of three-point shooting percentage, now they're about middle of the road, shooting 33.2% from three. Kyle Alan Boswell being a big reason, 17 points, 4 assists per game. You do have each of your top three scorers still shooting less than 30% from three. That does include David Marosic, who he's a little bit more of a versatile piece, 13.5 points, 9.5 rebounds per game, but just getting a Vucevic back out there has only been able to give you about 5 rebounds per game, but I expect that to just continue to go northward as he gets more and more healthy. You could tell in the first few games that he returned, he was a little bit banged up and he wasn't quite 100%. Last three games, he's been able to give you double figures in all of them. I think that that's going to be big, but for Iowa State, this is a unit that has a lot of just really good guard play in general that is headlined by the fact that Bruce Horton is giving you 20 points, 4 assists, shooting over 50% from 3. That'll go downward a little bit, but John Mobley shooting about 37.5% from 3 with 14 points per game. And for Iowa State, they're not grabbing a lot of offensive rebounds. As a matter of fact, they're outside the top 275 in terms of percentage of their missed shots that result in an offensive rebound, but still a top 100 team in terms of rebound percentage, and they have the bigs to match up with this Illinois team, in my opinion, because you only have one player that's giving you over 5.1 rebounds per game. That'd be Brandon Noel, 5.4 rebounds, 9.5 points per game, but of your top five scorers, four of them give you at least 5 rebounds per game, including the 7-footer Christoph Tilley, who's able to pop some threes, comes on over from Santa Clara. His Ohio State team not really going to block a lot of shots or anything down low, but they've also done a nice job of cutting teams off from three. They're only allowing teams to shoot 27% from 3-point range. That's not the world's worst thing for Illinois, because this is an Illinois team that isn't taking a whole big bundle of threes or anything like that. But that said, it is an Illinois team that has become a little bit more accustomed to playing from the outside, with Andrei Sirakovic being able to give you about 15 points per game. Illinois is a top 50 team with regards to their own 2-point shooting percentage and opponents' 2-point shooting percentage. And for Illinois, to their credit, they do a nice job taking care of the ball. Top 40 team in terms of field turnovers on a per possession basis. They're actually outside the top 340 in terms of generating turnovers. I think that those clean possessions do allow you to get an over, and allows an Ohio State team that's very much based around their backcourt to hold in there. So I did set my line at 2.5 here at 3+. I'm going to be one to take those points with Ohio State, and I am going to be in on the total over as well. I did set my total at a 156.5, 615, 616 on the card. It is Indiana, and they're going to be playing us at Penn State. Penn State right now finds themselves as a 13.5-point underdog. So on this game, it is 149.5, seeing a 150.5 out there as well, and I do like the over. I did set my total at a 151. Now, Penn State has slowed themselves down quite a bit. Under Mike Rhodes, this is typically a top 75 team in terms of total possessions per game. They're currently outside the top 225, but here's what Penn State is doing. Taking care of the ball. They are number one in all of college basketball in terms of field turnovers on a per possession basis, despite the fact that they've got a very new look backcourt with a pair of freshmen and Malai Tunka, along with Keaton Mingo, being able to combine for about 28 points per game, with Mingo and Tunka may combine for about 8 assists per contest. And you've got Tunka shooting 45% from 3, and that's a great name to say, by the way. Freddie De Leon is really the main holdover from a season ago. He's been able to play 13 points per game as well. Not a Penn State team that's really dominant on the glass. You only have one player give you more than 4.2 rebounds per game. That'd be Ivan Juric, who comes over from overseas. He's been able to give you 10.5 points, 4.5 rebounds per game. So not a lot of second and third chances to be had for Penn State. That said, they've been a top 100 team in terms of defensive rebound percentage. They're not allowing teams to get to have second and third chances, and they're not allowing teams to get to the free throw line. They've been a top 20 team in terms of fewest free throw attempts allowed per possession on defense. Now, I did set Indiana as a 14-point favorite because I do think that Indiana is very much going to be able to dominate this game down low. You've got an Indiana team that has a guy in Tucker DeVries that just does it all. 3 assists, 5 boards, 18 points, shooting over 40% from 3 Orange, Sam Alexis. He was part of that Florida team that won the title last year. A block, 6 boards, 10 points per game. And Indiana has been a top 40 team in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, and also a top 30 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. Indiana's not quite as good at taking care of the ball as Penn State, but they're not far behind. Top 35 team in terms of fewest turnovers on a per possession basis, and they're just frankly the better shooting team. They're a top 90 team in terms of their own 2-point and 3-point shooting percentage, and they've also been a top 15 team in terms of opponents' 2-point shooting percentage, and that's been because you do have a Penn State team that right now is shooting about 37.5% from 3-point range, but in terms of percentage of their shots that come from 3-point range, they are outside the top 275. They are very much looking to drive the ball in down low. They're looking for a little bit more out of guys like Sasa and Ian Company, and I just don't know if that's going to be have for them. I do think that Indiana does find a way to be able to get the job done. They've got the best player in this game, and I do think that you're going to have lots of nice, clean possessions in this game with the way that both teams take care of the ball. So, circumstance where I did set Indiana Indiana is a 14-point favorite. I'm willing to lay the number, and I'm also going to be in on this total over as well. 617, 618 on the card. It is South Dakota. They're going to be on the road facing off against Wyoming. Wyoming's a 12.5-point favorite, and your total is 157.5. And for Wyoming, I did make them a 16-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number. You've got two teams that are pushing some tempo. Wyoming is currently 83rd in the country in terms of total possessions per game, and for South Dakota, once again, playing very fast. They're about 24th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, and two defenses that are opposites. Now, South Dakota much better with their defense than they were a season ago. Last year, they were absolutely awful, but they're still about 200th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. Wyoming is 40th, and for Wyoming, it's just a well-rounded effort. They're a top 175 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. They're a top 30 team in terms of opponents' three-point shooting percentage. Now, Wyoming only shooting 66.8% the free throw line on offense, but still, they're 68th in the country in terms of both points scored on a per possession basis and percentage of their missed shots that result in an offensive rebound. This despite the fact that they've only got one guy that's given you over 4.5 rebounds per game. That'd be Caden Bennett. Comes over from Quinnipiac, 10 points, 5 boards, 3 assists. He's been very rock solid. And then you just have a lot of guys that know their role, like an Uge Rojas, who's been able to give you 9 points. He shoots 47% from 3. Lolan Walker has been that main facilitator with 4 assists, 15 points per game. Bennett has been that main guy in terms of generating turnovers with 2 steals per game. And then for South Dakota, it is big that you've got the 7-footer and Cameron Penn's back after he missed half the season last year. He's been able to give the team some rough and double down low, 10.5 points, 6.5 rebounds per game. And Isaac Bruns has really been a put the team on his back sort of guy, 19.5 points, but he only shoots 25% from 3. And for the South Dakota group, they're only shooting 31% from 3-point range as a collective. And last year, this was a top 5 team in terms of fewest turnovers on a per possession basis, with losing Paul Bruns and a few of the other pieces from last year's backcourt. That has really suffered. Right now, they are outside the top 230 in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis, doing a great job of giving themselves second and third chances as well. South Dakota, a top 75 team in terms of percentage of their missed shots that result in an offensive rebound, getting absolutely barbecued down low, though. They're outside the top 300 in terms of opponents' 2-point shooting percentage, so I do think that you're going to get a lot of scoring going down in this game. Semi-total 162, even though South Dakota is probably more equipped than most teams to handle the elevation, I do think that the elevation gets to them. I said Wyoming is a 16-point favorite, so I want to lay that number with Wyoming, and I'm going to be in on this over as well. 619, 620 on the card. It is Colorado State, and they're going to be playing us at Dartmouth, and Dartmouth is an underdog of 19.5 points with a total of 156.5. It's a Colorado State as a 21.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number. Dartmouth's still a relatively good defensive rebounding team. They're a top 100 team in terms of percentage of opponents' missed shots that they just rebound themselves. Opponents are grabbing about 26% of their missed shots as an offensive rebound. And for Colorado State, right now they are playing very slowly. 357th of the country in terms of total possessions per game. Yet numero uno in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, shooting 45.9% from 3-point range. That'd be the highest 3-point shooting percentage, I believe, this millennium. I would need to double check, but man, I mean, they have been absolutely smoking there, as you right now have each out of your top 6 scorers shooting at least 39.1% from 3, and all but one of them shooting at least 44.1%. This is going to go downward. Like, they're a really good shooting team. Josh Passarelli is not going to continue to shoot 53% on threes on over 7 threes per game with 15.5 points per game. Kyle Jorgensen rocks all at 15.5 points, 6 boards, 3 assists. He's shooting 51.5% from 3. Kerry Booth, all of a sudden, is shooting 46% from 3 with 13.7 rebounds per game. These numbers are going to taper off just a little bit, but even with them tapering off, I still do think that Colorado State is going to be able to find a way to get the job done. Now, Colorado State, they are going to need to do a better job with their interior defense. They are outside the top 3 in terms of opponents' 2-point shooting percentage. They've actually been a really nice team on the boards, even though they don't grab a lot of second and third chances themselves. They don't allow their opponents to grab a lot of second and third chances. And for Dartmouth, you do have a guy in Brandon Mitchell Day who's done a nice job down low, 13 points, 8.5 boards, 3.5 assists, good versatility here, only shooting about 26.5% per 3. And Dartmouth as a whole, they do shoot 37% from the outside, but they are sloppy with the ball. They are turning the ball over about 14.5 times per game. That's outside the top 275 in terms of overall ball security. And we have seen the Dartmouth team in recent years really crank up the tempo. They're a mid-tempo team this year, about 181st in the country in terms of total possessions per game. And to the credit of Dartmouth, they're allowing teams to shoot less than 31% from 3-point range. I don't know how long-lasting that's going to be, but they also don't force any ball pressure at all. They're outside the top 300 in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. I think that Dartmouth is just going to be a little bit too sloppy with the ball. I do think that there's going to be regression here with the Colorado three-point shooting, but even with that regression, I do think that they get the job done, control the boards, and control this game against a Dartmouth team that does have Kareem Thompson right now giving you 20 points on 50% three-point shooting. He should see a little bit of regression. I like Connor Edmondson, Jaden Williams combining for about 23 points per game, and Williams shows in their 4.5 boards as well, but do you think that Colorado State, even with missing a few of those threes, they're going to be able to grab a few second and third chances, and I do think that they find a way to be able to get the job done in a really good home court environment. So, semi-line at 21.5, willing to lay with Colorado State, and I like the under. Semi-total 149.5, 621, 622 on the card. Arizona State is playing host to Northern Arizona, and the Lumberjacks of Northern Arizona do find themselves as a sizable underdog of 17.5 points. 153.5 is the total, and this at a total of 154.5, I'm going to be in on the over. You've got an Arizona State team that they're not necessarily absolutely gunning it for all mankind or anything like that, but they're not afraid to run a little bit. This Arizona State team, in terms of total possessions, bringing about 157th in all of college basketball. Northern Arizona's right there, 161st. So these two teams play at pretty much the exact same tempo, and for Northern Arizona, even though you lose Carson Tout from a season ago, this has still been a pretty solid team in terms of locking things down inside. They're a top 225 team in terms of opponents' two-point shooting percentage. They're allowing many more second and third chances on the glass, but Zach Davidson has been really good with 16.5 points, 6.5 boards, shooting in the mid-30s from three, and Arizona State is going to have their hands full guarding this Northern Arizona team from the outside, as you do have Arnie Ozanek, who's been able to give you 10.5 points, shooting 44% from three. Isaiah Shaw shooting 47.5% from the outside with 10 points per game, and Northern Arizona, top 150 team in terms of their own ball security. Now Arizona State, over the last few seasons, they've become better at being able to generate turnovers. Right now for Arizona State, in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, they're a top 75 team with this regard, and they are shooting 39% from three-point range. Each of their top four scorers shooting at least 40% from three. That includes the big man, Masamba Diop, who's been able to give you about 11.5 points, 5 rebounds per game, but it's actually Santiago Triot with his 6 rebounds per game leading the way, but Arizona State not giving themselves a lot of second and third chances. They're outside the top 270 in terms of percentage of their missed shots that result in an offensive rebound. Heck, they're outside the top 225 in terms of their overall rebound percentage, and they have been getting killed inside. They're outside the top 240 in terms of their own two-point shooting percentage, outside the top 275 in terms of opponents' two-point shooting percentage. They've really done a nice job winning the turnover battle, but I do think they're in Arizona going to do a nice job being able to keep things clean. Marcus Adams, who comes over from CSUN, bit of a disappointment thus far for this Arizona State team. Only about 3 points per game. Now, I love the game of Mo Odom. 19 points, 6 assists, stealing after contest, shooting 45% for three. That three-point shooting will probably go downward a little bit, but also has turned the ball over about 3.5 times per game. So, if Northern Arizona set them as a 16.5 point underdog, won't take 17+, and I'm in on the over, so I told 154.5, 623, 624 on the card. This is going to be a neutral court game as you've got Florida taking on UConn. It's a neutral court game, but as we know, it's going to be a little bit more of a UConn crowd. But that said, right now with UConn, there are 4.5 point favorites. Total on this game is hovering between 146 and 146.5, and I did set a total of a 149. I am going to be willing to take a shot on the over. You do have a Florida team that's right now outside the top 330 in terms of their 3-point shooting percentage at 26.9%, but they're still playing really fast, 32nd in terms of total possessions per game, and Florida's a top 10 team in terms of percentage of their missed shots that result in an offensive rebound. As a matter of fact, about 44% of their missed shots result in an offensive rebound. They should be able to win the battle down low, even with Terrace Reed back for this UConn team. You saw Alex Caravan, who's able to give you 6+ boards, good versatility with a double-figure amount of points as for his career shot in the high 30s from three-point range, but Alex Condon, 15 points, 9 boards, 3 assists per game. Ruben Chinyelu has been able to give you about 11 boards, 10.5 points per game. Micah Hanlogden has been really good with being able to give you about 6.5 rebounds per game. So all these guys are stepping up. It's just a question of the backcourt for Florida. I actually think that Urban Klovsar might be their best guard right now, because while you do have Boogie Flynn and Xavion Lee as your main starters, with Flynn about 12.5 points per game, he's shooting just 25% from three and isn't necessarily the biggest facilitator. He's been giving you about 2 steals per game, so he's been good defensively. And Xavion Lee is doing a nice job doling it out, 3.5 assists to 1.6 turnovers per game, but he's shooting about 21% from three, and Klovsar shoots 37% from the outside. He's not really going to run the offense, so you probably need to have Xavion Lee so as a main guard, but Klovsar has really been the lone guy that you can count on to be able to knock down a shot, and that is a big reason why I did say UConn is a 5-point favorite. I am willing to lay 4.5 with them. The home court advantage I think that you get at MSG actually very much favors UConn, with Terrace Reed and the little sample size that he has played, 15.5 points, 8.5 rebounds per game. I think that getting him back has been very big, but That said, even if you don't have him necessarily at 100%, this team should still be relatively good down low. You've got a guy in Alex Caravan, who I mentioned before, has been around the block. But on top of that, when he has been out of the fold, Eric Ribe, who doesn't necessarily give you a lot of versatility, but I mean, he stands 7 feet tall. He's been able to give you about 5 boards, 10 points per game, a block and a half per contest. You've got Silas Emery, who does a bit of everything, 10 and a half points, 5.5 assists per game. And now Malachi Smith seems to be really finding his role with this offense as well. Off the bench, about 3.5 assists, so 1 turnover per game. UConn's a slow tempo team, about 300th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, but they fire on all cylinders on offense, top 40 team in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, as they're a top 50 team in terms of fewest turnovers on a per possession basis. So I think that you get a lot of good, clean possessions in this game. I did set my total at 149. I like the over end with UConn, willing to lay up to 4.5 with them. 625, 626 on the card. It is USC, and they're going to be on the road against San Diego, and the Toreros of San Diego are a 17.5 underdog. 162.5 is the total. Did set a total of a 160.5. I do like the under. Now for USC, they have been a top 50 team in terms of total possessions per game. A little bit of a warp stat. That triple overtime game against Troy makes it look like they're playing with a few more possessions than what they really are. And San Diego's not necessarily the most up-tempo team in the world. They're about 239th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Now for San Diego, they are well outside the top 275 in terms of rebound percentage. And this is not a team that is the moniker of, shall we say, stoutness with regards to their defense. 250th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. USC has been about 131st as well, but with this USC team, they are going to be able to do a nice job in terms of guarding down low. They're a top 10 team in terms of block shot percentage. You bring in Gabe Dines, who a season ago over at Youngstown State was just a shot blocking machine at like 7'2", 7'3". He's been able to come in. He's been able to give you a little bit over a block per contest in limited minutes. You've had about 2.5 blocks. Jacob Kofi, who throws in their 7 boards, 10 points per game. And then you've got the main attractions on offense in Chad Baker Mazzara, Rodney Rice. They're combining for over 41 points per game between the two of them. They shoot about 37.5% from three. And for Rice, 6 assists, a little bit over a steal per game. And Chad Baker Mazzara actually does give you a little bit over a block per game as well. And USC has been good at guarding the outside. They're allowing teams to shoot less than 31% from 3-point range. And this is just a San Diego team that doesn't have necessarily a ton down low. As a matter of fact, they don't have a single guy that gives you over 5 rebounds per game. It's a San Diego team that has been very reliant upon their perimeter play, as this team has been a top 125 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, and they're a top 40 team in the country in terms of their free throw shooting percentage. They're a bottom 30 team in terms of free throws generated per possession, though. Tyler Johnson, along with Juan Sebastian Gorecito, have both been able to give you 10.9 points per game. They combine for about 3 steals per game, and Gorecito shoots 38.5% from 3. Tunari Lane comes over from the Sun Belt. He's been able to give you 10.5 points per game, but you need a little bit more out of Tim Moore, who's only been able to give you about 3 rebounds per game. As a matter of fact, Asani Diop is 4 rebounds per game. He is the lone guy on the roster that gives you over 3 rebounds per game. That said, I did set a line here of 14.5. I do think that San Diego is going to do a little bit more down low. They need Dominique Bilford-Tough to give you more than 3 points per game, but even though this is a San Diego team getting dump truck down low, they have been a team that has been relatively solid in terms of being able to guard the 3-point line with the way that they generate turnovers. I think that that's just enough for them at home to be able to hold in there in a game where I do think that things are going to be a little bit more up and down. But again, with San Diego about 240th in terms of total possessions per game, I think that this total is just a scotch too high. So I did set a total of a 160.5. I'm in on the under, and I'm willing to take 15 plus with San Diego. This is the last game on the normal Las Vegas betting board before we hit the extra games. This is 627-628 San Jose State. They are going to be playing with Long Beach State. Long Beach State, a 7.5-point underdog. 141.5 is the total. Set a total of a 142. 141.5 is the absolute max buy point on the over, but it is a buy point on the over. You've got a Long Beach State team that has become a little bit more mid-tempoed, right around about 200th in terms of total possessions per game. San Jose State is playing really slow, 335th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, but also have a San Jose State team that is in the bottom 15 in all of college basketball in terms of opponent's 2-point shooting percentage, 45th in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. And this has become a Long Beach State team that has become a top 125 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. Now, Long Beach State also 291st in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. They've actually given up fewer points per possession when they've been away from home rather than at home. And for Long Beach State, the big key for this team is getting Gavin Sykes going. He's been able to psych out teams with about 16 points per contest. He's shooting 35.5% from 3-point range. The Syracuse transfer in Peter Mesterovich has been able to give you 13 points, 6 boards. He's been rock solid there, but Masurovich is right now the lone guy on the roster that's giving you over 3.6 rebounds per game. So even though San Jose State is giving up a lot of open looks from two, San Jose State is very clearly going to be able to have the advantage on the board, even with having someone like a Cedric Nananana be able to give you about 5.5 boards, 6.5 points per game. That's big. And then you fought Mundi, who comes over from Iona, about 12 points, 9 rebounds per game. For a San Jose State team that is shooting about 35.5% from 3-point range, San Jose State outside the top 225 in terms of generating turnovers, but a top 80 team in terms of not putting teams on the free throw line as well. It is a San Jose State team that has been themselves outside the top 225 in terms of opponents' 3-point shooting percentage, but Kobe Garland, he's going to be the best overall scorer in this game, 18 points, 4 assists, 4 boards. He's shooting 39% from 3-point range. Team has been without Javon Hanna for much of the season, so it's been a little bit of a hamperance, but you've got Jermaine Washington, who's done a solid job being able to give this team 12 points per contest as well. I do think that in the end, San Jose State, they should be about a mid-tier favorite. I did set them at 8, and I do think that for Long Beach State, just the fact that even though this team has been able to generate the turnovers that they have, the fact that this team is right now outside the top 250 in terms of 2-point and 3-point shooting percentage going to hurt them a little bit, and I do think that San Jose State takes care of the ball and wins the battle on the glass. So set a total of 142, I do like the over, and with San Jose State, we'll delay up to 7.5 with them, and now we the extra games.
The normal betting board picks are complete, but there are some extra games today, so we go into the bonus.
306-545, 306-546, it is Buffalo, and they are going to be on the road facing off against UMBC. UMBC, a home underdog of 1.5 points, draw on this game, it is 147.5, did set a total of 149. I like the over. Now, you've got a pair of teams that are actually surprisingly playing much, much slower than they have in the past. UMBC is typically known for being one of the most up-tempo teams in all of college basketball. They're down to about 217th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, and you've got a Buffalo team that's right now 346th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Now, Buffalo leaving a lot to be desired on the defensive side of things. Shock, shock, surprise, surprise. 192nd in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. Buffalo, all of a sudden, though, has become one of the most efficient offenses in all of college basketball thanks to some really, really good 3-point shooting. As Buffalo, currently they are clocking in 56th in the country in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. And UMBC doesn't quite have the guard play that they've had in past seasons, but they've still been able to do a relatively okay job in terms of finding a way to be able to knock down some shots with Ace Valentine. Doing a nice job doing it out. He's been able to give the team 3-plus assists per contest. Right now with UMBC, they are 217th in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, and that's a big reason why I did say UMBC has a slim 1-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take a shot on them outright on the money line. DJ Armstrong, all right, has 2 buzzer beaters to his credit, 12 points, 3 assists per game for this UMBC squad. They're not going to generate a lot of second and third chances outside the top 3 in terms of offensive rebound percentage, but Josh Odawundu missed the first 3 games of the season. He's come back. He's been able to give you 10 points, 5 boards per contest. He should be able to help out a little bit more with that regard. And this is going to be a team that's not going to be under too much duress with regards to the boards, as you've got a Buffalo team that they do have Noah Batchelor, who began his career over at Maryland. He's been able to do a pretty rock solid job down low. He's right now giving the team 8 points, 5 rebounds per game, but Buffalo's outside the top 3 in terms of their own offensive rebound percentage, outside the top 225 in terms of overall rebounding. Buffalo outside the top 275 in terms of opponents' 2-point shooting percentage as well, while UMBC inside the top 175 in terms of opponents 2-point and 3-point shooting percentage. Ryan Sable, though, 15.5 points, he's shooting 36% from 3. Daniel Freitag, 20 points, 4 boards, he's been able to shoot 41.5% from the outside. And to the credit of Buffalo, they've been a top 175 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, while they themselves only turn the ball over about 10.5 times per game. With UMBC, they have had their issues with regards to turnovers outside the top 250 in terms of ball security, while they themselves outside the top 300 in terms of turnovers generated on a per possession basis. But with the way that this Buffalo team just doesn't do the world's greatest job inside, I do think that that allows UMBC to be able to have just enough to be able to get the job done, especially with Kaden Diggs being able to step up, give the team 8.5 points, has not really shot it well from 3-point range, but he's been able to give the team a few boards. He's been able to give the team now double figures too in the last 3 games. I think that he can be an X factor here, and I do think that both of these defenses do give up quite a bit in a slower tempo game. What's up, my total 149? I do like the over, and UMBC on the money line, 306-547, 306-548. You've got Loyola Maryland, and they're going to be on the road facing off against VMI. And VMI It's a 1-point favorite total on this game. You're getting it at a 151. I did set my total at 147.5. I do like the under. Neither of these teams are necessarily playing at a ridiculous or an aggressive pace for Loyola Maryland, about 185th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. You've got a VMI squad that's currently 219th, and with VMI, the defense has been rather suspect thus far this season. Not a team that is forcing the issue on anything really other than generating turnovers. They've been about 175th in the country in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, and you've got a Loyola Maryland team that's been pretty much the same, about 181st in the country with that regard, but the Ricky Bradley injury has really been hurting this VMI team. A VMI squad that does have some relatively good three-point shooting, but they're going through it without him. 345th in the country right now in terms of their three-point shooting percentage. Now, if there's one good thing for VMI, they're shooting 38.1% from three-point range at home, less than 26.5% from three-point range away from home, but certainly not a team that's going to be dominating on the glass or anything like that. With VMI, you've been able to get about 8 boards and 18 points per game out of TJ Johnson, who's been the main headline guy, but around him, you just don't have a ton. Walker Andrews has given you about 11 points per game. He shoots 37% from three. Mario Tatum, he's been able to give you about 11 points. He's also shooting about 39% from the outside, but other than AJ Clark, there's not a single other guy on the roster that gives you above 4.5 rebounds per game. And for Loyola Maryland, this team was expected to have some issues down low with losing the Ilitch brothers from a season ago, but this has been a top 175 team in terms of rebound percentage, as Jacob Theodosiu might be the most versatile player in this game. 2 steals, 3.5 assists, 4.5 boards, 16 points per game. You've had Emmett Adir be able to come in, give you about 12 points, 5 boards. And for Loyola Maryland, it's been very much holes greater than some of its parts with regards to rebounding. You don't have anyone other than Adir that's giving you more than 4.5 rebounds per game, but you've got 4 different guys give you over 4 boards per contest, including Braden Speed, who's been able to give you 11.5 points, 4 boards. He's been able to do a nice job in the backcourt. It is a Loyola Maryland team that is outside the top 340 in terms of ball security, turn the ball over a little bit over 13 times per game, and the free throw shooting percentage of 63.5% leaves something to be desired, but they've been a top 175 team in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage, and this is a VMI team that I think is going to get very much romped down low with the fact that they are outside the top 175 in terms of opponent's 2-point shooting percentage. For VMI, they are outside the top 300 in terms of defensive rebound percentage as well, and I do think that those second and third chances that Loyola Maryland's going to get, coupled with VMI being about 300 in terms of their own 2-point shooting percentage, allows Loyola Maryland to get the job done. Set my total 147.5. I like the under, and Loyola Maryland on the money line, 306-549, 306-550. You've got Virginia, and they're going to be playing us to NC Central, and NC Central finds themselves as a underdog of 33.5 to 34.5 points. So on this game, it is 134. And with Virginia, I set them as a 30-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take the points. With Maryland Eastern Shore, they have not been the world's worst defense this year, which I know that that doesn't sound like the most like encouraging thing in the world or anything like that, but for Maryland Eastern Shore, currently a bottom three team in all of college basketball in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, that's just been an absolute disaster class, but and they're about 209th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. This has been a Virginia team that's had a little bit of hiccups with regards to their defense, 81st in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. I do think that Ryan Odom is going to be able to get that cleaned up a little bit more, as if you go back to when he was over at VCU a season ago, that was one of the best defenses in all of college basketball, and there's no question that Virginia is going to be able to win the battle down low. Their international man of mystery in Jonan Grunlo, along with Thaddeus DeRitter, have been very good in terms of hitting the glass, combined about 13 rebounds per game. DeRitter, right now your top scorer of 16.5 points per game. For a Virginia team that's right now shooting just below 40% for three, top 30 team in terms of their 3-point shooting percentage. Jakari White, he went off last weekend. He's shooting 54% from three. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the norm. He had that 25-point game against Zayton, but I mean, still, he's been able to slide double figures. You've had Malik Thomas, who comes over from San Francisco, go give you about 12 points, pair of assists per contest. Like what these guys are bringing to the table. And for Virginia, this has been a top 25 team in terms of percentage of their missed shots that do result in an offensive rebound. Meanwhile, for Maryland Eastern Shore, this team has been having a very difficult time in terms of taking care of the ball. They're turning the ball over 17 times per game, and that's why the offense has been so bad, because they're actually like a top 250 team in terms of their 2-point shooting percentage. They really don't shoot it well from three outside of Joseph Lucandero, who's been able to give you 12.5 points, 4 boards. He's shooting over 50% from three. Rest of the team has left something to be desired, but and you do have someone like Zion Oblana, who's been able to give you about 7.5 points, 4.5 rebounds per game. You've had Trey Brown chip in there about 4 boards per contest as well. This is not the world's worst team at knifing it inside, and for Maryland Eastern Shore, their line teams only shoot a hair above 30% from three, so I do think that Virginia might actually have a little bit of a tough time shooting it from three. Now, Maryland Eastern Shore, I just don't think does their part with this total. We have seen them be sloppy all season long in terms of their offense, but the defense honestly has not been the world's worst. I know that they've been giving up a few more points here recently, but still, they've been able to hold in some of these games against a team like a Georgia Tech. They held Binghamton, which I know it's Binghamton, but they held them to less than 65 points. So I do think that this is a Maryland Eastern Shore team that's going to be able to do just enough to be able to hold in this game. Like they played a 69-50 game against Nebraska. So I'm going to take the points here with Maryland Eastern Shore. Set them as a 30-point dog and on the underside by total at 130. 306-551, 306-552. And it's compensate. They're on the road against St. Joe's. St. Joe's hopes to not be average Joe's as 20.5 to 21-point favorites. Total is between 144.5 to 146.5. And with St. Joe's, I only set them as a 19.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take the 20-plus with Coppin State. Now, Coppin State is a pretty grody team, not going to lie. They are outside the top 340 in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. Defense, pretty much on par with that, 351st in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. But this has been a St. Joe's team that, despite the fact that they've got some relatively good shot blocking, they have left a lot to be desired, both on the offensive end and the defensive end. For St. Joe's, they're outside the top 310 in terms of their own three-point shooting percentage. In terms of the defense, they're 210th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, just as Ajabor. He gives you over a block and a half per contest, but he also is giving you only about 3 points per game. You need a little bit more there. The backcourt has Deuce Jones really headlining things, 17 points, 4 boards, 3 assists, but he's only shooting about 30% from three. Jaden Glover's shot at about 33% from the outside. He and Austin Williford, who's been able to give you about 6 points, shooting about 33% from three. Lone two guys are seeing meaningful minutes, shooting above 29% from the outside. Now, St. Joe's, when they get to the free throw line, they actually do shoot 80% at the charity stripe, and this has been a top 55 team in terms of percentage of their shots that result in an offensive rebound. They're outside the top 3 in terms of defensive rebound percentage as well, so they allow their opponents a lot of second and third chances. Now, compensate, not a lot of size. You've got Demetri Hall, who's been able to give you about 8.5 points, 5.7 rebounds per game, and this Coppin State team does not have a single guy that gives you over 8.8 points per game. That's an issue, as you've got the likes of a Jamari Piercy, Khalil Horton being able to combine for 15 points per game between the two of them. And Horton actually has heard a hoof from the outside to shoot 39.5% from three-point range. It's a Coppin State group that just is not taking care of the ball. They're outside the top 350 in terms of their ball security. They're outside the top 300 in terms of defensive rebound percentage. So there should be a lot of second and third chances to be had in this game. And it's very interesting in terms of tempo of these two teams. As St. Joe's, they underwent a coaching change late in the process in the offseason, and as a result, they've been a little bit fast, but not overly fast, 95th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Coppin State has fed themselves up a little bit more from recent years as well, about 178th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, but I just think that you get a little bit too much sloppiness to be able to get an over. I set my total at 145.5. Right now, seeing that 146.5, like the under, and at 20+, I'm going to be willing to take those points with Coppin State. 306-553, 306-554. Howard is on the road against North Carolina A&T. A&T is a 4 to 4.5 point favorite. 145.5 to 146 is the total. And I said Howard is a 3.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to take them outright on the money line. North Carolina A&T has not played a lot of Division I competition, and when they have, they've been getting just dump trucked. And I recognize that this is a Howard team that has less than savory metrics. This is a team that had to face off against Duke, and they have challenged themselves here throughout the beginning part of the season. Now, the Mount St. Mary's loss was not necessarily amazing, but for this bunch, they've got the best player out there on the floor. That'd be Bryce Harris, 21.5 points, 6.5 boards, 3 assists per contest. He's shooting 37.5% from 3-point. Cam Gillis comes in from the Patriot League over at Lehigh, and he's come in to be able to spy a pair of steals, 4 assists, 9 points per game. So he's been able to do a nice job there. For Howard, they become a top 55 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. And for this bunch, what they really need to improve upon is down low, because that's where they've really been getting destroyed, outside the top 275. In terms of opponents 2-point shooting percentage, but have also been a top 100 team in terms of not allowing second and third chances on the glass. So even though they don't necessarily have the size that they have in past years, right now Harris is the lone guy that's giving you 5+ rebounds per game. They're doing a rock solid job there. And then for North Carolina A&T, it's a case where it's been all about the Walkers and Lewis Walker along with Luron Walker. As for Luron Walker, in the four games that he's actually played this far this season, he's been able to give the team 20.5 points per game. Problem is, he's been quite a bit banged up. He did return in that game against NC Central, and in that game against NC Central, he didn't necessarily look like himself. He only supplied the team with 13 points in the first three games he had played. He had 22+, so it's going to be interesting to see how he's going to be out fair in this game. Trent Middleton, who comes over from Delaware, he's been able to get the team 11.5 points per game. He's right now shooting 39.5% for three, but this A&T team shoots less than 30% from the outside. They shoot less than 67% at the free throw line. It's just a grody offense outside the top 300 in terms of their own ball security. And it's not like these guys are the Mona Lisa Vitos of defense as well. This team is outside the top 300 in terms of free throws allowed on a per possession basis. They're outside the top 300 in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage. I think that Howard is a better team here. I set them as a 3.5-point favorite. I like them on the money line. Now, Howard has really throttled themselves down. Typically, when you think Howard, you think of a team that's all gas, no brakes, that is solid on offense, not so great on defense. Right now, for Howard, they're about 214th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. And for North Carolina A&T, they've had a lot of different tempos the last few years, and right now they're very mid-tempo, 166th in terms of total possessions per game. So, set Howard as a 3.5-point favorite. I like them on the money line. Did set a total here of a 147.5. Think that you're close enough for late-game fouling, so also like the over. 306-555, 306-556. NC Central's on the road against Kentucky. Kentucky's a 37-38.5-point favorite. 148.5 is the total line. I did set a total of a 152.5. I like the over for this NC Central team. Last year, they played at a pretty fast tempo. They have dialed themselves back a little bit more this season with NC Central. In terms of total possessions per game, right now they're checking in about 309th in the country. And for Kentucky, this has clearly not been the same offense from past years, and they're slowing themselves down quite a bit. They're about 167th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. That said, I think that this is actually a very good get-right spot. I set them as a 38.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number. You've got a NC Central team that is once again in the top 35 in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis, but bottom 15 team in terms of putting teams on the free throw line. They are allowing teams to shoot over 35.5% from three outside the top 300 with that regard, and right now they are allowing teams to grab nearly 13 offensive rebounds per game. They're outside the top 300 with that as well. Now you've got Gage Lattimore, who's been really good in the backcourt for NC Central, 45% three-point shooter, 19 points per game. Kyrick Davis, he's come in, he's been able to give the team only about 6.5 points per game, as outside of Lattimore, you've got one other player that gives you over 6.5 points per game. That'd be Corey Carvey, who's been able to give you 14 points, a block and a half, a steal per contest. He's been one of the main post presidents for the team. Though you do have Deontay Johnson, who's back from a season ago. He's been very much a pass-first guy. As many points as assists, 5.8 points, 5.8 assists per contest. But for Kentucky, one thing that they've actually done a relatively okay job of is taking care of the ball. I know that it's been a less than tremendous Kentucky offense, to say the least, that's currently shooting less than 32% from three, but top 75 team in terms of ball security. Denzel Aberdeen, along with Otega Owe, have been able to combine for 26 points per game. They've dealt with quite a few injuries, with Jalen Lowe just now returning to the fold, and in the small sample size that we've actually seen him, it's been a little bit of a disappointment, but Malachi Moreno continues to do a solid job down low, 9.7 rebounds per game. For NC Central, you just really don't have a lot of rebounding, so even with Mohamed Diabate right now dealing with injury for Kentucky, they should be able to very much control the boards. You do have Kelchi Ogagero, who's been able to give you about 5.5 rebounds per game for NC Central, but all the second and third chances that they're allowing on the glass, I think is going to take it out of them, and I do think that Kentucky is going to very much look to play up-tempo, and I think that they're going to have success with it. Semi-total 152.5. I like the over, and I'm willing to lay up to 38 here with Kentucky, 306-557, 306-558. McNeese is on the road. They're facing off against Rhode Island, and Rhode Island does find themselves as a home underdog of 1.5 points still on this game, 142-142.5, and I did set McNeese as a 2-point favorite, so I'm willing to lay the 1.5 and not a hair more. You've got a pair of teams that have been relatively solid on the defensive side of things. I know that Rhode Island has taken it on the chin a little bit more recently, but still 99th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. McNeese, even with the coaching change to Mr. Armstrong, who comes over from Baylor, they still have been a good defense themselves, 73rd in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, and you've got two teams that are playing relatively slow and controlled. For Rhode Island, last year they tried to speed themselves up. That didn't necessarily go their way, so they've dialed it back to being about 300th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. You've got a McNeese team that, when Will Wade was there, they played super slow, and they're back to that, about 263rd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. But for Rhode Island, just not having that versatile guy like a David Green from a season ago, I think it's really hurting them. Now, you've got Tyler Cochran, who's a bit of a do-it-all Swiss Army knife guy who does a nice job generating turnovers, 13.5 points, 6 boards, 3.5 steals per game. He's only shooting, though, about 27% from 3. Jamari Tripp, he's got teams tripping, shooting 46.5% from 3, 12 points per contest. And Jonah Hinton, who comes over from St. Bonaventure, has been able to spy 16.5 points, taking 9 threes per game. He's shooting about 36.5% from the outside. But for this Rhode Island team, they have been a little bit vulnerable with their 3-point shooting defense outside the top 200 in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percent. And where I think that they're really going to be hurt is down low. They're outside the top 250 in terms of defensive rebound percentage. Now, they have been a top 75 team in terms of generating turnovers, but it's a McNeese team that is a top 30 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. McNeese allowing all sorts of second and third chances. They are outside the top 340 in terms of percentage of opponents' missed shots that resulted in offensive rebound. They themselves a top 50 team in terms of offensive rebound percentage, though, and you've got a very versatile player in Gawari Duel, former top 50 recruit, who's been able to give the team 10 points, 2 steals, 4 assists, 3 boards. Not necessarily a great 3-point shooter, but Javon Garcia, who's back from season ago, he's shooting 46.5% for 3, 13 points, pair of steals per contest. DJ Turn It Up Richards, he's a holdover from last year. 9 points on over 47% 3-point shooting, and with Rhode Island having a little bit of a kryptonite from the outside, I do think that McNeese in a battle of two teams that do a nice job generating turnovers, they do the better job. I think that this is going to be a low-tempo game, so I set my total 140. I like the under, and with McNeese, not willing to go any further than 1.5, but I'm willing to lay 1.5. 3-6-5-59, 3-6-5-60. Bucknell is on the road against Ryder. Ryder is a 1-1.5 point home underdog. 139.5 to 140 is the total. And set a total of 139. You're at the 140. I'm going to be in on the under. And I said Bucknell is a 7-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay it. Now, Bucknell has their issues themselves. Like, this is not a great Bucknell team, to say the least. This is not the days of, like, Chris McNaughton and all those guys. But, I mean, for Ryder, 363rd in the country in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, 329th in points allowed on a per possession basis. Bucknell not too far behind, 320th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, but Ryder is just losing the turnover battle. Ryder is 353rd in turnovers on a per possession basis on offense, 361st in generating turnovers on a per possession basis on defense. That's going to help out a Bucknell team that has had a tough time taking care of the ball. They're outside the top 275 in terms of their own ball security, but they do shoot 33% from three. And then the freshman that comes over from Germany, Amon Doris, at 6'10", he's been supplying 14 points. Four boards. He's able to pop it from three. Doesn't necessarily do so well, but he's able to pop it from three. And then you got Archley Spendone along Jaden Williams, who've been able to combine for about 17 points per contest. You've got Royad Bijelic, hopefully I got that correct, give you 12.5 points per game. He's been missing for quite a few games, probably going to be out of the fold once again, so that does mean that you're going to need to get a little bit more here out of Gigar Brzic. He's a transfer that's come in. He's been able to give the team about 6 boards. He began his career over at Croatia, and he's been able to give the team quite a bit of rough and tumble down low. I just don't know if Ryder is going to be able to match up with that, because they lose their top rebounders in the Ingrams from a season ago, and for Ryder, you actually do have a pair of holdover guards from a season ago, Flash Burton, Zion Cruz. Both are giving you 11.1 points per game, but both are combining to shoot about 25% from three-point range. And for this Ryder team, out of your top seven scores, zero of them shoot above 29.2% from three, with Antoine Wilson giving you 4 points per game, shooting 30.8% from three. Among players that have taken at least 4 threes this year, he is the only one that is shooting above 30%. Like, man, it's just not great, to say the least, with this Ryder team. You've had Mohamed Diallo be able to give you about 4.5 points, 4 boards per contest, and you do have Caleb Smith give you about 8 rebounds per game. He's outside, though. He's only about 6'5", and for this Ryder team, they're shooting 27% from 3-point range while being outside the top 350 with their 2-point shooting percentage. Just not a lot going right for them. They should get a little bit more offense going against Bucknell, but man, this has been a team that, other than their non-Div 1 game against Eastern College, they just have not been able to get past like the 65-point plateau all season. So, circumstance where I did set my total 139, I'm in on the under, and I'm willing to lay up to 6.5 here with Bucknell. We wrap things up with 306-561, 306-562. DePaul is playing host of Morgan State, and Morgan State does find themselves as a underdog here of 21.5 to 22 points. 152.5 to 153 is the total, and I did set a total of 156.5. I do like the over. Now, Morgan State not necessarily playing at the same warp speed that they have in past years. Morgan State currently, in terms of total possessions per game, they're checking in more on about 232nd. You've got a DePaul team that has been a top 100 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. They're more of a mid-tempo team at about 172nd in terms of total possessions per game. But that said, with Morgan State having the 7-footer and Christian Oliver give you 4+ rebounds per game, I think that they're going to do a sturdy job down low. Morgan State leaving something to be desired defensively. They're 324th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, but they have a DePaul team that has all sorts of question marks as well. So I'm going to be willing to take the points with Morgan State, set them as an 18.5 point underdog. For DePaul, they just had a little bit of a tough time replacing Connor Enright at the guard spot from a season ago. Now, you've got four separate guys on the roster that give you at least 2.1 assists per game, with Landon Blocker being that main guy, 12 points, 4 assists per contest. For a DePaul team that's right now only shooting about 32.5% from three, out of your top five scorers, Cruz McClure is the only guy that shoots above 30% from three at 42% from the outside, 9 points per game. But NJ Benson has been able to give you 7.5 rebounds per game. It's a DePaul team that has been pretty solid in terms of not allowing second and third chances, top one or team with regards to defensive rebound percentage. They're also allowing teams to shoot about 34% from three-point range, and bringing back Rob Lawson was big for this Morgan State team. They have been really running things through him, as he's been able to give the team 13 points, 4.5 assists, shooting 36.5% from three. And then Elijah Davis has been able to dole out just under 5 assists to go along with his 14.5 points per game as well. Guy that has been very, very traveled in college basketball. And then on top of that, you bring in this Southern Miss transfer in Alfred Worrell Jr., not a guy that really lights it up from three, but 15 points per game, a little bit over a steal per contest. It is a Morgan State team that has become a top 175 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. And for Morgan State, they do shoot just 28% from 3-point range. I do think that you see a little bit of positive regression there. And Morgan State has been getting dumped out down low. They're about 357th in the country in terms of the opponent's 2-point shooting percentage. But I do think that they do just enough to hold in there against a DePaul team that has been hit or miss from 3-point range. And with this team as well, you've had quite a few injuries. Marlon Harris missed a game or two earlier in the season. Trent Edwards, a main holdover from a season ago, he's only been able to play in 2 games, but they're starting to get him a little bit healthier as well. I do think that that allows Morgan State to be able to hold in this game. So I did set Morgan State as a underdog of 18.5 points. I do like the points, and I do like the over. And that'll wrap things up for the Tuesday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN family of podcasts. A big thanks to Rob Donaldson of the show / podcast Rob's Best Bets. He joined me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of 2 ways to be able to find those in. First one is my Twitter / X timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, Larzy M, they mean does not matter, so per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. And I'm with you guys every single day on this podcast, give you guys picks and analysis on every single game, every single day. So I am back with you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much.